one of my favorite movies when I was in high school and early university. It's Half-Baked.
Mm.
I think you can figure out why.
You just love Funyuns.
I love Dave Chappelle, but yeah, I was smoke a lot of weed then.
Say lot. His name. Yeah. Call him Buttercup.
Yeah.
Butter stuff.
I have to basically start the show with one of the most iconic lines from the movie, which is, I'm not going to do what everybody thinks I'm going to do. Freak out, man. I have to keep my composure. As another great comedic genius once said, Will Ferrell in Old School. I was trying to think yesterday about the amount of hours of shows I have done discussing either Raptors trades or going in the trade machine and thinking about trades and reading reports and fantasizing about what different Raptors rosters would look like and what the ideal situations were for the team, right? I think that it really did come down to me believing, okay, they're going to restock some young talent and some picks around some really good talent that I still believe in. And then yesterday, the clock keeps ticking. Our boss, Dan, he asks me to stay because he goes, hey, if a big trade happens, we want you to be able to rock and roll. And I go, you bet. I break out that air guitar. I'm ready. Tick tock, tick tock. Sitting there as Blake Murphy, who's here, writes down every second pick. Blake, do you know how many second round picks got moved yesterday?
Going back to Rui,
I know the
Rui
answer.
Rui is officially is 49 with the potential for it to be 53.
Because, I don't have 38.
Oh no, there's more than that, bro.
At 38 was 38 in the last 2 days.
Yeah, I might have been yesterday.
Like I included the Kyrie and Rui deal just because like I already had it going in my sheet. But yeah, going back to Rui, which is if it's a week before the deadline, it's the deadline. 49 with the potential for it to be 53 because that Knicks pick, if they make the playoffs, turns into 4 second rounders instead.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of second round picks. Two drafts worth of second round picks.
Again, thank God for Blake because the rest of people around basketball are going to be going up to the podium for the next couple of years, and there's going to have to be a traffic cop that goes, nope, actually, Denver. They're going to be like, what? Yeah, Denver, this is you. Get up here, Denver. They're going to have to make some random second-round pick. The only team without them is the Raptors. They went, you know, screw second-round picks. None of those. None of those first-round picks. We're going to get rid of that. And Jobo, I feel bad because when you asked me yesterday, does this feel like the Teoscar trade? I went, no, and I cut you off before you finished your point, which I am one to do. I admit my flaws.
It's okay.
This was a billion times worse than the Teoscar trade.
That's what I was getting at.
Okay, so I know there are some people out there who are on the corner of, hey, whatever happens, trust Masai. Fair. Won a championship. One of the most highly regarded executives in all of basketball. I don't think that Masai is washed. I don't think that Masai sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that all front offices, if they hang around long enough, go on cold streaks. And the Raptors are in a cold streak. I went back to 2019. Well, they won a championship. And they won a championship. I don't want to do this, but I feel an evil part of my heart that needs to say this. Masai was gifted the Kawhi trade. Okay? Like, the Lakers had the best trade package for it. Everybody in basketball knows it. And the Spurs spited them and gave Kawhi. Like, that was a no-brainer trade. And it felt like yesterday, all the things that we have celebrated about this front office in the recent years of being just like uncompromising and unmovable and inflexible, that they're no longer just celebrated anymore. That this has become something different now where people are going, maybe you do need to accept that the market is the market sometimes. Maybe you do need to be a little flexible. In their defense, I think that they did get screwed by the Kevin Durant trade. I said this going in. As soon as Kyrie got traded, what did I do on the show? I said, everyone's talking about how this opens things up for Fred and how this makes things easier for the Raptors. And I brought up the Kevin Durant potential and people went, no, they're probably not going to move him. And he's such a different player. And even when he got moved, people said, oh, OG's value is only going to go up. Why would it go up? Why would it go up when another team is the clear favorite in the West? Like, yeah, some teams would feel the need to respond, but Here's my guess. The Raptors thought they could get 3 first-round picks for OG Anunoby, and they never got offered that 3rd pick, and they were not willing to compromise on that. And now they're kind of in the same position that they were with Kyle Lowry last year, which is, or sorry, 2 years ago, where they decided to stand pat, and now there is a ton of pressure on this offseason to actually be able to match the value. Lowry's value was matched at the deadline, but again, we do this revisionist history with this stuff, with this front office all the time. They tried to trade Kyle Lowry, but they tried to trade him too late. They should have traded him before the season started. They decided not to. They held on to him for too long. Other organizations get criticized when that happens. The Raptors are immune to that because they won a championship. They're in the glow of that. It's fair. But now let's look at the evidence. Okay, since 2019, drafted Malachi Flynn and Jalen Harris. Yeah, that's nothing. They failed to sign Kawhi, which, sure, say whatever you want about Kawhi wanting to go home and that they never had a chance. It's fine. They didn't re-sign him. You have to bring it up. Then they signed Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Matt Thomas and extended Terrence Davis.
You're missing one that offseason.
Who?
Stanley Johnson with a player option.
Sorry. Stanley Johnson, who people also really liked, but come on.
They also re-upped McCaw for 2 guaranteed
years.
Yes,
2 guaranteed years of Patrick McCaw. I had that one written down. Yes.
Sorry.
It's okay. I want you to jump in with this stuff. Because, yeah, like, it's a lot of misses. They draft Scotty Barnes. Great. Their best move. If it's not for that, literally just about everything else is either a disaster or meh. They draft Delano Banton and David Johnson. Neither of which has materialized into much of anything so far. Banton, I still kind of have some faith in for some things.
For a mid-second, it's like you got 2 years on an NBA roster. That's above expected. But yeah, David Johnson's nothing. Like, he comes off the bench for the 905.
Yep. They traded Norm Powell. And again, they decided not to turn Norm Powell into longer-term assets. They decided to turn him into more of a win now. That is Gary Trent. So far, Gary Trent has been a fine player, but the Raptors have been a middle-of-the-pack organization or a bad organization with Gary Trent, and now face a decision of either losing him for nothing or paying him, I would say, upwards of $100 million a year.
The Gary for Norm trade, good process, eroded by the deal you gave him.
Yep.
The 2+1 kind of kills the value of turning Norm into Gary, because here you are facing this situation again when, you know, if this were baseball terms, like, okay, these are his free agent years. You bought out his ARB years off RFA. Like, this is it. Now you really got to pay him. Still, I mean, you and I, from the moment that deal happened, we're just like, why 2+1?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that kind of erodes some of the value of turning Norm into a longer term asset.
Well, I know why 2+1, and it's because Gary Trent had reservations about being here long term. That's it. Like, the Raptors did not want to give him a 2-year deal, essentially. And they knew he would be opting out after that. He's a young player who can shoot the basketball. Like, it legitimately would have had to have been a catastrophic injury for Gary Trent for him to have opted into that deal, which would have made it bad for the Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
When Gary Trent first arrived with Toronto, there's a lot of belief that he was not bought in right away, and he was not thrilled about joining the Tampa Raptors, and that it took an entire offseason to essentially get him to buy into being here. He thought potentially that he was even going to be flipped right away. Anyway, let's keep it moving. Then they signed Kem Birch, who was waived by the Orlando Magic, a team that was going nowhere. Kem Birch, who gave them some decent minutes on a completely floundering team that was going nowhere, that was intentionally trying to tank. 3 years and $20 million. Part of the price for getting Jakob Poeltl was getting off of the final year of Kem Birch's contract. They didn't give him, like, non-consequential money. They gave him over $6 million a season. A guy who is a backup big, who is under 7 feet tall, who has had a history of injuries, and who got waived by the Orlando Magic. 3-year contract. Not great.
By the way, to give you some context as to what that costs to get off of, like, if we're comparing that deal to, if we're comparing Kem being included in that to other deals around the deadline, the Pacers picked up 3 second round picks to take on $8.8 million in money this year and $3.2 million next year.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be about the going rate, about $4-5 million per second round pick of eating money and helping teams get out of either cap space hell or tax hell.
They give Otto Porter the mid-level. They traded a first-round pick for Thad Young, and I'm tired of calling it a trade back. They traded a first-round pick for him. They got a second back, okay? They missed out on the opportunity to draft Walker Kessler. And yes, we can pretend like hey, maybe they wouldn't have made that pick. Maybe they liked Coloco more all along. Well, then that's actually poor process as well. Like, there's no way that you can look at this and not say, hey, your team that needed a center could have had the opportunity to draft someone that Michael Grange said yesterday could end up being a defensive player of the year candidate. Mm-hmm. Missed out on him in a trade so that they could get Thad Young. Then they pay Thad Young, who, again, much like Kem Birch, immediately doesn't, he can't stay healthy. He's not quick enough. He's too old. Like, it's very limited in terms of the ways that they can play him.
At least that one is barely guaranteed for next year. At least that was basically a one-year deal.
At least it was basically a one-year deal. But they re-sign him, and they go, we're bringing him back. Fine. He's supposed to be here to be a leader. I'm sure he is. The only thing I've seen publicly with Thad Young, though, was a blow-up on the court with the player that he's here to try and mentor. Okay. I'm just saying it's something.
Yeah, I do think you've seen, you know, and we've talked about this, like Thad Young's going to look best when he's playing with good players because he's a multiplier guy. He's a dot connector. He makes things easier for good players. At no point was the thinking ever, well, our bench sucks and he can anchor a bad bench. It was to make things easier for the top 7-8 guys in the rotation. And when those guys stop being good, Thad Young's utility goes down.
All I'm saying is,
no, I know.
Scotty Barnes, great pick. Really great pick, right? Mm-hmm. He's had a up and down year. I think a lot of down. He's done a lot of good. The other night against Memphis, he scores that basket against Jaren Jackson Jr. And you go, that's hope. That's what hope looks like. Blake Murphy tweets out that he's one of the most efficient scorers in clutch minutes in the NBA. And probably still the most confident thing that you feel about the Raptors is that that guy has the fearlessness in those late minutes. You saw it in the playoffs last year where he just started against the Sixers and went, you know what? I don't care that this is a playoff game. I don't care that Joel Embiid's down there. I'm going at it. Outside of him, you've got Gary Trent, Jakob Poeltl, Malachi Flynn, Jalen Harris. You had a season of Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and Matt Thomas. Delano Banton, David Johnson, Kem Birch to a 3-year contract, and Otto Porter's mid-level.
Yeah.
That's it. And now you have a deadline where a team that has not hit on those assets year over year had an opportunity to try and remodel their franchise, and they didn't do it. And you know what has probably driven me a little bit the most crazy about the discourse? And Blake, and you know, I want to actually start making this a conversation more than a rant. I just needed to get some of this off my chest to start the show today. There's this idea that, hey, it's gonna be all right. It's going to be fine. Look how it worked out with the Kyle Lowry trade. Again, the Raptors tried to trade Kyle Lowry twice in his career. Both times, they were saved by the other organization. They tried to trade him to New York. The Knicks balked, and it ended up in the We the North era and a championship. And last season, they would have traded him at the deadline for Talen Horton Tucker. Like, that was widely reported by Brian Windhorst. The Lakers said no. And much like the Clippers this year with Fred VanVleet, I think it was a mistake of theirs to not move Terrence Mann in a future first. That's a million years away for Fred VanVleet. Yeah, sometimes it is a little bit of the market, but it also matters that you don't make moves proactively. And for Masai Ujiri yesterday, when he stood up at the podium, he kept saying, I don't like deadlines because, you know, deadlines are not when you make the best decisions as an organization. You go, well, then don't put yourself in that corner. Then negotiate more fairly early on. And I understand the idea of a general manager trying to hold out for the best price. And I also understand that had he moved some of these players, some fans would be critical. You're not going to make everybody happy all the time as an executive unless you make a trade like DeMar DeRozan for Kawhi Leonard, because one of the teams trading in the deal is actively trying to keep Kawhi Leonard away from the Los Angeles Lakers. Unless you have one of those deals, you're going to make some people unhappy. I get it.
And even that one, they were the 4-bounce shot on the rim away from who knows how that overtime turns out. And that move is heavily criticized for, you know, cashing in all your organizational culture and the face of the franchise for a second round exit, right? Like,
buddy,
if that goes differently. And that's how championships work.
I know.
They're always on the edges like that, on the margins. But yeah, that one, it's awesome. They won the championship and they get all the credit for that. They also, you know, didn't perfectly optimize that. Like, there was a point in time where they were violating the CBA to get Malcolm Miller on the roster. Like, it was, and I love Malcolm Miller, but that's, you know, Malcolm Miller and Jordan Lloyd playing minutes at points in that season. It was like, okay, you know, it and maybe that's just that it happened so late in the offseason, the Kawhi trade in relative terms. But yeah, there have not been the obvious slam dunk victories that we're used to seeing. And this, this I think, has kind of informed the discussion around draft picks backwards a little bit, because I see people saying things like, well, this front office has done such a good job finding undervalued talent and developing them.
They used to.
And even, I would argue, if you are good at that, second round picks are and first round picks are valuable, because you get to pick from the Pascal OG pool instead of the, well, maybe you can turn an undrafted point guard into something over the course of a couple years. And I love Fred. It's one of the best development stories in NBA history, along with Pascal. But Pascal wasn't going undrafted. He was like projected to go in the early 40s. It's not like he was someone they got out of nowhere and would have been able to get undrafted. So yeah, you get, if you really believe in your talent development, having those picks is good, because you get better foundational players to build on. And if you don't believe that they've done a good job at the talent identification and stuff, you want more kicks at the can. You want more, you know, hey, Delano Banton, Justin Champagne, David Johnson, all in the same draft pool. And if one of these guys becomes a bench piece, awesome. That's worth it for 2 second round picks and undrafted. I don't really understand the, and look, the market, we just joked about how many seconds got bounced around. Like, the market was very clear that seconds are currency now.
Yeah.
That's all they are. But the, oh, it doesn't matter, they're just picks, who cares about a teen in the 2024 draft? There are opportunity costs to that. And one of the reasons the Raptors have been in such a tough spot depth-wise is the legacy cost of cashing in all of those opportunities to win a championship, which is obviously worth it. But, like, they are living the consequences already of not having all that pick equity.
Well, Blake, this is something you and I talked about the other day in the Hub, which I think is a fascinating, like, it's a fun conversation, but sports conversations, we think about them through the lens of social media now, where it's like people will be at each other's throats. Even yesterday, it was like people are going nuts, right? But I think one of the most fun what ifs with the Raptors is, what if the Raptors would have done the cutthroat thing when Kawhi left and they realized, and they did what a lot of people thought they were going to do. If you recall, the Raptors went on a West Coast trip and they won a bunch of games without Kyle Lowry in the 2020 season. And people asked the question, and those people, I mean me, when I had free association, and I got killed for it. And I actually, in the podcast, came to the conclusion, like, no, it's so fun watching the run it back, and you owe it to these guys, and it's a cool thing in sports, and not being cutthroat all the time is more fun. And I like it as an entertainment product, so I kind of stand by that take. But I'm a fan. That's what I wanted as a fan, right? Like, and I'm trying to think about that even now, looking at this deadline, is how a lot of fans built up an expectation and then it didn't happen. And so people are crushed. And then there are some, you know, maybe there are some realities to the fact that OG is worth as much. I have a hard time believing that OG Anunoby is going to net you back the exact same return as he would have when you can get a playoff run and a season with him. Like, I just don't understand the logic behind that. I don't understand how Fred VanVleet, when he can walk for nothing, is going to be more valuable than Fred VanVleet in a sign-and-trade. I don't understand how Gary Trent Jr. is going to be more valuable in a sign-and-trade than another team just signing him outright, especially if he just decides to go. So, like, I don't see the connectors, especially when the rest of the NBA is going to be looking at the Raptors and saying, well, we know you have to sign Jakob Poeltl. Like, and if you're his agent, you're absolutely going, like, this is the greatest day of my life, because we wanted $20 million. We'll go down to $18 million, but anything less, we'll test the market. Because guess what? Somebody will give Jakob Poeltl that money. And if it's not the Raptors, then he's going to walk for a first-round pick and a rental.
And here's what, like, I'm going to write about today when I do the cap write-up. Like, the big thing about this is there's, like, bird rights are awesome. Acquiring someone's rights so you can go over the cap to re-sign them opens up options for the next offseason. It's good. It means this, you know, in their eyes, is not just a rental. And because you couldn't probably get the cap space to sign Jakob Poeltl in the offseason, etc. There was a thing in the NBA called the bird rights trap. And it is basically that your back's against the wall. If you let these three guys go, or any combination of them, you do not have cap space to replace them. So what are you going to do? You have to re-sign these guys. If you're at the table and each one of those guys ends up getting $2-3 million more per year than you expected because they have that leverage, well, guess what? You just spent $6-9 million more per year when you're close to the tax. And there's also an element of, you know, if you're signing guys in the $15-25 million range, like, those are not superstars, and you'll eventually need one of those. They're tradable contracts and everything, but there is this thing called the bird rights trap where you, like, it's no longer pay this money to Gary, pay this money to Fred, pay this money to Jakob Poeltl, or spend that money elsewhere. It is pay that money to those guys, or they walk for nothing.
Yeah, or else.
And
exactly.
That's a trap.
Well, this is what I'm saying.
And it might work out, but it's a tough spot to operate an offseason from.
That's what I'm saying. And this is kind of what drives me a little bit nuts about yesterday's media conference with Masai Ujiri and the explanations that he got. First of all, everybody has always loved hearing Masai say, we want to win, we want to win. And it's like, that's great, man. But yesterday, when you're saying that, it's like at some point there needs to be a little bit more action in terms of pivoting this organization and picking a clear direction as to what they're going to be. Like, there was a lot of, I thought, personally, it was a little bit of a condescending media conference where it was like, I know you guys think it's easy to make trades. I know that, hey, but we have to, I look at the big picture. It's like, hey, man, everybody that is a smart basketball mind that I talked to in the last 48 hours thought that the Raptors were going to have to make a move for a lot of the reasons that Blake just outlined, that they were going to have these three contracts, that the team was not good enough. And he stood up there and acted like nobody was thinking about what the Raptors' future is going to be. And I'm sorry, but like, if you're thinking about the future and the big picture stuff, then a first round pick and losing that and a second round pick the following year, a year after you traded a first round pick, you don't have a deep bench and you're up there talking about the failures that you've made. I think it is kind of pertinent. It is kind of like salient information. And now with the Raptors, it's like, I'm sorry. The biggest difficulty is they have basically told the fan base they're trying to win in the next two seasons. And he's going, well, it's just that we're not playing together and we're, you know, the team has been kind of selfish.
Use the word selfish a lot.
Yeah. So he's talking about them being selfish. Okay. How do you think Fred VanVleet's going to respond to the idea that he knows that this organization tried to trade him? You think it's going to be well? You think he's going to buy in all of a sudden to what the Toronto Raptors are trying to do? Gary Trent Jr. is playing for a huge contract. You think that he's going to be buying into what they want to do? I think Jakob Poeltl, again, knows that his security is here, so he actually is going to buy into it.
Got his best bud back.
But again, an OG Anunoby is a year away from a contract extension and is someone who wants to roll. Like, why is this a surprise to you that a group of guys who are essentially feeling like they're mercenaries and who have had their names in the deadline for the last month and who you're still saying at a podium, we can reevaluate in the offseason after this is done, are all of a sudden start buying in and playing hard for one another. Like, it's nonsensical.
There is an incongruence here, too, in that you are telling these guys they're part of, and look, your hands are tied with the extension rules around the NBA. Like, you can't just extend guys whenever you want. It's not how the rules work. Fred's case, it doesn't make financial sense for him. But you are trying to get these guys to buy in. You're trying to talk about the future while their place in that future is undetermined. And that's a little awkward. And JD, one of the biggest things, and I know this is your show, you're the host, but I want to ask you something.
Yeah,
because
no,
I think this is something you and I have hinted at or tiptoed around trying to figure out over the last couple of years. The marquee move that Masai Ujiri has made as a Raptors executive is the kind of sweep of, you know what, sentimentality has to go.
Yeah.
Dwayne Casey's out. He's helped build this, but it's time for a new voice. DeMar is the face of the franchise, and to that point, like, arguably the best Raptor ever, you got to make a tough decision, and you got to move on if this organization is going to become a championship-caliber organization. Mm-hmm. And stability's good and all that stuff. You mentioned in 2019-2020, maybe they missed a window. I personally don't think the performance in season informs that a lot because, like, once you got to the start of the season, like, it is what it is. Like, you're not going to start selling pieces in October, but they made the choice when Kawhi left to not shop those guys in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then, look, there's a little bit of misfortune there where this team overperforms. It's like, that was the most fun Raptors team since at least the 2013-14 season where they became unexpectedly good.
To me, they're my favorite team ever.
Yeah, like, they won 15 games in a row at one point. Yeah. I was on that West Coast trip right before the world shut down, and it was like they were canceling media availabilities left and right, so I was like a little annoyed from a content perspective, but they were like incredibly shorthanded and like OG's guarding Jokic and coming up with six steals and 30 points. Like, they were incredibly fun.
I love that team, Blake. I said that it was when they lost, when the season ended, I said my favorite, it feels like my favorite TV show has been canceled. Yeah. I was crushed.
And like, the pandemic happened and that's a real thing that affected them, and they still were 5 points. They lost game 7 to Boston. And then that could have been a finals team or whatever. And
God,
you know,
you just reminded me of all the times Pascal couldn't even like dribble.
The hardest thing that, or sorry, the ballsiest, I guess, or most like FU move Masai could have made after the championship. Number two is blow it all up immediately when Kawhi leaves. Like, hey, this was a mercenary title. We're tearing it all down. But number one, I think, and I think this led to them not doing a lot that year, is what if we run it back and stick it to him and we're really good and he regrets having left and we show that this was more about what we'd built than just Kawhi? And they kind of did that, not all the way to the finals, not all the way to the championship. But I think the trickle down from that, and yeah, there's the Tampa stuff, but you look at the moves they've made and, you know, Gasol and Ibaka leave and they make the hard decision to not give those guys multiple years. And it looks like the right decision. Those guys are like borderline unplayable the second they leave. Danny Green has been solid, but hurt a lot. Kyle Lowry is into it with the Heat and Pat Riley and stuff now. Like they've made the right decisions to move off when they have, but the timing of those things and then now keeping this group together, do you see a contrast there between, hey, you won the title by being completely unsentimental, and now why you're kind of stuck in this middle is sentimentality?
This is what I'm saying. I, as a fan, loved that team, the 2020 team. I don't think that anyone truly believed that they could win a championship that year. And so by keeping those players, they opened up the door of course this is going to be a good team, and of course this is going to be harder to trade them in season. So like the idea of, well, no one expected them to win, but they were really open to moving guys at the deadline that year. It's like, huh? You were going to bring back a team that had Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, Fred VanVleet, you know, Kyle Lowry, and expect that they were going to be a disaster and that you were going to have to tear it down? Like, no, the most likely outcome is what happened, which is that they were a good team that played with a lot of guts and a lot of pride as defending champions, because that was the character of the group. And it painted you in a position where you couldn't move anybody at the deadline because, like, yeah, it would have been an absolute disaster. The team would have, like, you couldn't have just traded Lowry and Gasol at that point. It would have had an indelible ripple effect on guys like Pascal and...
At the deadline, they were 40-15.
Yeah, no, there was no scenario. There was no scenario of that happening. When they had to do it was before the season. Yes. And I'm not even trying to be overly critical of them for doing it. What I'm actually saying is, at that point in time, there was a... You can play the what-if game, because it's a fun what-if. Because building a ton of assets that you would have been able to get for Lowry, Gasol, and for Ibaka at that time to put around those three guys, maybe the Raptors are in a position right now. Well, it's a weird one because they wouldn't have Scottie Barnes, but you'd be probably looking at something where the Raptors are one of the deepest teams in the NBA and still have assets off those trades. Like, it would be very, very interesting. But I don't fault them for that. What I fault them for is having this now happen, two deadlines out of the, well, actually three deadlines in a row, because they really didn't need to do the Thad Young trade. And I said this at the time, like, there was no desperation, or there should not have been desperation, to flip this first round pick and just say like, hey, we're moving back in the draft for Thad Young. Like, he was a guy who was not playing for the San Antonio Spurs and his best years were clearly behind him. And okay, you made this win now move. You added a little bit of depth. You want to take a step forward, but you should be criticized when your team doesn't take a step forward the next year, because that was the line of thinking that you had in making that trade. So that doesn't happen. And then you go into this year and you say, we've got a good team, we're going to try to win. It doesn't work out. If you don't like deadlines, get something done ahead of them. Masai, I cataloged basically everything in my mind from this media conference, because a lot of it was upsetting. But he was like, the whole point he kept making of, oh, well, the teams don't call seriously until the last 5 minutes. I'm like, is that so? Because a lot of the other teams got deals done before the last 5 minutes at the deadline. So, like, it's one thing for you to kind of stand up there and say that to everybody, but the rest of the league was making it pretty clear that there were very, very significant offers for OG Anunoby. So what do you think is happening here? Like, that the Raptors were actually able to completely keep it ironclad and that no one knew what was going on and that those offers weren't real when it comes to OG? That those offers weren't there? That there wasn't maybe a better time in the season when they didn't have their backs against the wall with Fred? Like, it works both ways. Masai has waited for his opponents to come down to the wire and for them to blink, right? He's gone, I dare you not to trade for someone. But the league keeps going, we like your players, but we're not going to give you the world plus when there are other teams to negotiate with. Like, we can go out and make an insular move. And you know when I knew the deadline was dead for the Raptors? It's when the Gary Payton trade happened. Because as soon as the Gary Payton trade happened to Golden State, you went, okay, that's out. And then people celebrate this idea that, like, the Raptors asked for Kuminga and plus, 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 plus. But it's like, I hate putting in these terms because it's kind of a bozo way to do it. But we all know that guy that's in your fantasy league that sends you the trade offer and you balk at it and it makes you offend. And then you don't even deal with that person.
Yeah, it's Sam. My name, in my league, it's Sam.
You don't even deal with that person because it's like there's not even a point going to you because you're going to try to withdraw everything. And this is what I kept saying to friends yesterday is like, Masai doesn't just want to, you know, win a trade. He wants to embarrass you. And that's fine when you're actually winning those trades. But it feels like the rest of the league has adjusted. And now, like I said, the uncompromising Masai Ujiri, this front office, it feels like it has become a bit of a problem, that element of the way that they do business.
And you could kind of trace through the day yesterday as potential Raptors suitors
went
off the book. Because like over the course of like 3 hours, and this is, I mean, you can go back as far as, well, the Lakers make that deal to get D'Lo and Beasley and Vanderbilt, right? So they're probably out of the market for anything other than tweaking stuff because they use their big asset and their big contract. And then you see the Knicks get Josh Hart. And like, okay, well, if they were the team offering three protected first for OG, like they're not doing that now. Yeah. And then obviously the KD thing throws everything into disarray or whatever. But then
but it
you
took
see,
the Suns off the board.
It did take the Suns off the board, and it took the Nets off the board in all likelihood, right? And then you start seeing other teams like Portland settles on Matisse Thybul. And it's like, that's not redundant with other stuff, but like they're clearly not going for it.
You're not going for OG and Anobi if you've traded for Matisse Thybul.
No. And then like you see the Clippers go in on Bones and Eric Gordon. It's like, okay, well, there are those chips. And you start to see this. And at one point, I thought that a New Orleans deal was happening because, and Memphis got Kennard in the multi-team deal. And at one point I'm like, okay, a Pelicans thing is happening because they're the only team left. And then they get Josh Richardson. And then I'm sitting there looking, I'm like,
it's done.
Like OG Anunoby or Fred VanVleet are better than what these teams got shopping elsewhere, but they don't have the assets to also get those guys. So you could kind of see it coming off the board. And I don't know, like, I think the 255 stuff, the 5 minutes to three is like a little tongue in cheek. But I also think like we watched each potential trade partner come off the board slowly over the course of the day. So I don't know that that's, you know, accurate. Like I think he's mostly being glib with it anyway, but,
But you know what I'm saying, Blake.
That teams don't. Yeah, I do. Like, and I'm agreeing with you because like you could watch them come off the board and like, okay, when the Clippers and the Lakers and the Suns and the Grizzlies all come off the board, like it's time for you to go to Denver and to New Orleans and revisit that stuff.
Dude,
right?
That's it.
If you're actually intending to make a trade, which maybe you know the real takeaway here is they weren't.
But that's it. This to put it in words that Pete understands. I'm the problem. It's like maybe when you can't get a deal done with anybody, when the whole league wants your players, as Masai said again at that podium, where he's like, yeah, everybody wants our guys. And then he went, oh, if everybody wants our guys, maybe something's wrong here. It's like, yeah, they don't fit together. You can have great players in isolation. Like the Nets, we just saw the Nets blow up. You think that the Nets didn't have great players? They had three of literally the greatest players of this generation, and it didn't work out. It was a disaster. There's a hubris involved in thinking like just because there are great players on your team that they can work together. To me, and I think to a lot of observers, the Raptors have a very clear ceiling, and that the pieces that they have, while again, in isolation, very good, they do not fit together. The team does not have enough shooting. The rotation pieces don't really make sense with one another. They don't have enough guard depth and playmaking. And it's been a problem for the entire year. And him bringing in Jakob Poeltl and saying he's a really good passer, I think it's a really scary part of this where it's like, so wait, your 7-footer that really should be playing under 30 minutes a night is going to be your playmaker? Like that's going to be the guy?
Your point center?
That's going to start to draw guys together? The market is the market. You are what you're worth. And a lot of people end up learning this when they try to go for a raise. What happens? Sometimes you quit your job because it's outrageous. But a lot of times you have to be like, okay, I've shopped around. I've tried to get a job and this is my value on the market. And to me, it seems like there is a little bit of extra sentimentality, Blake, to kind of like round out this conversation of the Raptors have drafted and developed these guys. They feel as though he believed so strongly that this group was going to work out, that this vision was going to work out, that to get him off of those guys, it was going to require something that frankly wasn't realistic. And this is not the first time this has happened with the public, where it's like the perception has been sold that Masai is only going to take back a monster haul, and then it ends up being Precious Achiuwa, who's a fine player, but if we're going to go back retroactively and think about what Kyle Lowry would have netted before that season, it's a hell of a lot more than Precious Achiuwa.
It probably would have been, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, there's the element of doing right by Kyle and only sending him to a place that he would have wanted to go, but that's a part of this as well. So, I don't know. I think, you know, to kind of reset it on what the day looks like, and there's certainly an element of sentimentality of getting your own guy back and saying, you know, he's one of us, he's home. Again, like, big picture, you can see how they take a step forward, certainly the rest of the season. Like, they're going to make the playoffs now.
Dude, that's more of the infuriating thing is that they're going into the middle. Like, to me, you know.
Like, all my cap scenarios now, instead of having the number 8 pick penciled in, have the number 15 pick penciled in with the cap. Like, okay, you save a little bit against the cap, I guess. But
what pissed you off the most about yesterday? Like, what was the most, like, let's just say, what was the thing that frustrated you the most out of this, like, this last 48 hours?
With the Raptors?
Yeah.
Dealing future assets and like undervaluing draft picks when you are already paying the freight for not having draft picks.
For me, it was that, but it was also tied into, I guess I tie in the devaluing draft picks into this year as well, because I understand their position of thinking, you know what, there's not really a lot of moves that are going to make us a cellar dweller, and there's some of these teams that are going to take a step back, and there's going to be kind of a race to the bottom that always happens in these final, you know, 30 games of the season where it requires you to kind of sit players and dog it, and they have a light schedule. Who cares? To me, it is actually more valuable for the Raptors if they add 3 percentage points at being able to get Scoot or Victor Wembanyama than it is to lose with a group of guys that frankly don't really want to be together in the first round of a playoff series after winning a bunch of sort of meaningless regular season games. There's a part of me that does kind of hope, like, again, man, I want to see what's best for the Raptors. There's a part of me that hopes that these guys as a group look at this and go, hey, the rest of the world thinks we stink and everybody hates that we're back here, so let's go out and prove them wrong. The problem is that I ultimately don't think that they have the talent to be able to jump over the top 2 teams in the Eastern Conference. I actually weirdly think, like, if Cleveland got into a series with them, though, they'd be sweating. They would be like, oof, this team has
beat
us.
They lost 3 against them already this year.
That's what I'm saying. And all of a sudden, they at least are better suited to deal with the Jared Allens and the Evan Mobley interior game of them. And I guess just like the dribble penetration game of Garland and Mitchell. Either way, this is not a championship-winning team, and you devalued an asset this year, and you got rid of draft picks next year. So what I've said, you've signaled to your franchise is, you are trying to win now. You are trying to win in the next 2 seasons, despite being the 10th place team in the Eastern Conference and an entire body of work that indicates that you're not quite as good as you are.
And they're going to be better. It's going to be like,
so what?
Like, get ready for people. Oh, it's like, see, it's not going to be in a meaningful way.
But I was going to say, and that's so dumb. Like, we've watched the Raptors with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry hit the ceiling.
They're not going to win a playoff series, probably. And then the harder part about that is, and like, yeah, it's less fun to not be in the lottery when you're a first round exit. The bigger thing is like, there's not really a path to improving the team in the offseason unless you assume another trade is coming as well. Because like, cap wise, this is it. You got your first round pick. You got these guys back. And if you sign Poeltl, Trent, and Van Vliet to anything close to what we're expecting their markets to be, you're not even using the mid-level because you don't have the room under the tax for it. And I don't think you're paying the tax if this team's a first-round exit again.
Buddy,
so
they paid the tax one time, okay?
And like, it was a championship.
Yeah, they're not paying the tax. And nor, if you think that, okay, so let's think about the Warriors, for example. I think I actually already mentioned this on the podcast. You can go to Joe Lacob and say, hey, we've won multiple championships and we're the hottest team in basketball and we have Steph Curry in his prime and we're going to keep trying to win. And you're an individual billionaire with a bunch of other billionaires that are basically pocketing this thing who all want some of the glory and the glitz that comes with this. Fork up. And they're like, yep, no problem. It's another thing to go to the board and say, yeah, so we're going to pay an extra $30 million in luxury tax so that we can keep this team that was 7th in the Eastern Conference last year. They're like, are you out of your minds? What are you talking about? Get out of here. Anyway, it is so weird. And yeah, I'm sorry, but even if it does work out and even if they go into that offseason, Blake, what's their one move? Their one move remains trading OG and Anobi.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if you trade OG, even if you get the haul that was available to you this offseason, right? He said all the deals that were there are going to be there this offseason. Even if you get that, you've still kept your team good enough where you're going to hurt that draft pick for this year. And what the word you love to use, opportunity cost. Mm-hmm. If you have OG Anunoby playing minutes and he's not going to be a meaningful piece of your franchise moving forward, And I'm not saying conclusively that he won't be. Maybe there are other moves. Maybe they do move off of Gary and Fred, and those got one of them leaves for free. Who knows? You take that risk, though. But now you're working with pieces where it's like, okay, what are you trying to evaluate if you already know that you're not going to be able to have all of these guys? It's just such a weird position to be in.
And if you do sign and trade one of them, like obviously Pirtle's not going to be a guy you turn around and sign and trade, but let's say you sign and trade Fred and that's the way that you bring in different players. Okay, well, that's a forward-looking move and you're probably getting younger pieces back for that. So why did you trade future assets for a 27-year-old? Again, they're going to be better. But
they never should have done the Jakob Pertl deal first. And I know that there was probably pressure, but who cares? You have to let an opportunity like that pass you by without knowing the other information.
I have trouble seeing the Spurs at the buzzer being like, yeah, we'll just keep him and re-sign him. He's 27. He doesn't fit our timeline. But like, they have the bluff, I guess, of we have loads of cap space, like more cap space than we could ever use because we're not contending yet. But I don't think they were going to do that. And like, if this pick were, I don't know, a little more heavily protected and covered your downside a little bit more, maybe I'd feel differently about it. Maybe if that second wasn't this year when you're going to need inexpensive talent to round out the roster and this is a pretty good draft. Like, they don't have a second round pick till 2026 now. And,
no, dude,
I know it's like, again, like yesterday showed us it's just currency.
Yeah, you can buy them, but have they ever bought one before?
No, they traded like Matt Thomas and Terrence Davis for seconds.
Yeah, but
so
I'm
like
saying,
that's effectively like just acquiring one for nothing.
But I'm saying at the draft, you can actually buy
these
picks.
Yeah, you can purchase them.
I'm saying the Raptors haven't done it. And it to me, it actually does matter that the Raptors gave up a first round pick when they're the 10th pace team in the East and they were not planning on being bad this year and that protection isn't there because apparently the Boston Celtics, the best piece that they were offering back was second round picks and Peyton Pritchard. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of pushback when I tweeted about this yesterday from people going, Peyton Pritchard's a great player. He's a good player. He's an underrated player. Peyton Pritchard this season is playing 12 minutes a night and shooting 33% from three. Like, he's a guard that the Celtics, a team that actually needs another guard and another creator, they're not really willing to play all that much. They were going to give up the Danilo Gallinari contract, and that's basically it. Like, again, this is the Raptors negotiating against themselves, where you're saying, why this? Like, how did it end up being that the Spurs pushed you into, we're only letting you protect this through six? You can't protect this through the lottery for Jakob Pertl? Anyway, that's going to end up being a disaster. I think it's already kind of a bad move based on everything we've made. I don't like the process of this. Even if the results work out, I do not like the process. I never will. I won't change my mind about that. Anyways, let's take a quick break. Let's also just go, okay, well, what now? And then also, yeah, deadline. I guess a winner and a loser maybe for you. I was shocked our boy, our guy Bones, like the value really
for
came.
Nothing.
I know, but kind of made sense for nothing when you started to read more stuff about him in Denver.
Yesterday was a peak day for teams leaking dirt on guys as they're on their
Russell
way out the door.
Westbrook got called a vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
And then his wife had to explain to his kid that's not true.
That's BS. Anyway, quick break. Let's come back and finish off with Blake Murphy.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Okay. So while we're in break, who's in the low post?
Yes, it was. With Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks.
So Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks discussing, Zach Lowe reporting that the Raptors were offered three first-round picks from the Grizzlies.
And the Pacers.
And three first-round picks from the Pacers, which is pretty damn healthy. Anyway, so I just think that all we need to do with this now is, if that's Zach Lowe and Bobby Marks, then I don't want to hear it from anybody that, oh, the Raptors were only going to get one first or one or two first or whatever. It's like, that's a massive haul.
Zach did say that he didn't get the impression the Raptors were ever really that interested in trading Fred. Mm-hmm. But that was the spirit of what he said around Fred. But yeah, the OG thing, if you had three picks on the table, like Memphis has all their own picks. You could quibble on protections or whatever, but like they're going to be in the playoffs for a long time anyway. Mm-hmm. So they're like picks in the teens, probably. They have a 2024 Golden State first that's only top four protected, which would be a pretty nice asset.
Yeah, that's Masirat and I talked about that one. It's a very coveted one.
As Joe let us know, like the quibble seems to be that the Raptors wanted a roster player back. Now, whether that was in place of one of the picks or in addition to one of the picks, that's not clear, but like, was it Dylan Brooks? Was it Zaire Williams? Was it, I don't know. They got a bunch of stuff. They got so many good players.
Can I say that they... I it to me, it's pretty clear. In fact, I'm not even going to say it's pretty clear. It's detailed that the Raptors wanted 3 first-round picks and a player because Zach Lowe saying, quote, for instance, I heard Memphis offered 3 first-round picks for Ananobi, but Toronto made it clear to these teams that we, quote, want a player too.
Okay. Yeah, that's the...
And this is what I'm saying about being uncompromising and overvaluing your talent.
That's a lot.
Dude, OG Ananobi for 3 first-round picks.
And a player.
And they could be, like, near-term picks, too, because the way the rule works about trading consecutive future firsts, that Golden State one that Memphis has is extra. So they could give you their own 2023, their own 2025, and that Golden State 2024. Maybe the Golden State one wasn't on the table, but still, you can find your way to deals there.
OG Ananobi, coming into the season, what was the biggest question mark?
Health.
Yeah. Again, some pandemic-related stuff with the 29-20 season where he played 69 games and was relatively healthy, but got hurt in the 2018-19 season. That's why we don't really think about him with the championship team, even though he was on it, because he was hurt. But he was originally the guy that when Kawhi came in, people went, oh, this is the guy he's going to take under his wing and he's going to teach and make a different guy.
Called him Baby Kawhi for a while.
He got hurt. He got hurt that year. He played 43 games in the 21 season. He played 48 games last year. He's played 45 this year. He projects to go over that number. But again, dealing with an injury right now, it's been his healthiest year essentially since, the 2020 season. I'm sorry, but that matters. He's 1 year removed from his contract. He's a guy where there's rumblings about his happiness with his role in this organization and his fit with this team. And you got offered 3 first-round picks from the Indiana Pacers, an organization that right now is below you in the standings.
They also tossed in a second, too, which belonged to Houston.
Like,
it's... And Mark's also added that approximately saying, half, like, the league offered...
When Masai stands up there and says there wasn't an opportunity to do a blockbuster deal, just know that that is now reported by literally the most credible guy in basketball.
Yeah, the guy who doesn't report anything unless it's solid. Yeah.
So, anyway...
And you know what I'm reading from this, too, is like we're getting to... We're not there yet, but the fact that a lot of markets had information on what was offered to the Raptors immediately after the deadline suggests to me a little bit of frustration around the league at not being able to get a deal done. Like, we immediately knew what the Clippers offered. We immediately knew, or we now, not immediately, but we know what the Grizzlies offered. We know what the Pacers offered. There was another one out there, too, that I can't remember exactly, but and we had heard about the Knicks offer. So I don't know that, like, I don't think it's the Raptors leaking that they turned down 3 firsts for OG.
I thought it was the Raptors that leaked the Warriors thing where they went and they asked for Kuminga too, and they made it very clear. But, like, this is what I'm talking about.
But
the Raptors were not
questioning.
Just trying...
Now I'm questioning if the Raptors actually were the leaks behind the OG asking price initially, or if it was teams like getting a little frustrated at the height of the asking price and trying to put a little pressure on of like, hey, they're not saying yes to 3 first round picks.
Boy,
because like I would guess that note came from a Grizzlies side or a Pacers side, not a Toronto Raptors side. And agents usually don't get that level of detail until a deal gets cooking.
3 first-round picks is a very fair offer for OG Ananobi. And now this will be the standard for going into this offseason if this doesn't work out. And I'll be honest, to me, there's a little bit of fear for the first time with this front office of, well, we'll show you and we'll go down with the ship. Like, this has been a fear of mine with the Toronto Maple Leafs before, right? Like, but you look at it, and Dubas has made some adjustments, but overall there has been some, we're not going to change and we're going to go out on our shield and this is the way that we're going to do things. Okay. It feels a little bit like that with the Raptors right now. And what happens if you go into the offseason? The encouraging thing and part of this, like, just to play a little bit of, you know, optimism here, is that if the Pacers were offering 3 picks during the deadline, a team that was not trying to win a championship this season, that they would probably offer 3 first-round picks for OG Ananobi and the rights to re-sign him this offseason. Here's the problem. What if OG gets hurt again? What if OG demands out? What if it becomes more public that he is really unhappy in Toronto and that the minutes down the stretch this year, he decides to become vocal about it? And now, also, if you're the Pacers, what if Memphis, who if Memphis was offering 3 first-round picks and Indiana was offering 3 first-round picks, right? I know Indiana has, I'm just guessing here, Blake, you would know this better than I would. I know that Indiana has 1 Sacramento pick, right? At least?
No, they have an extra Boston pick, okay, and they have an extra Cleveland pick.
Okay, so maybe
both
those
with protections, but yeah, still.
But maybe those 3 first-round picks are like Indiana saying you can have our next year's pick and then the Boston pick. Like, there's iterations of this that are not as attractive as it sounds with 3 firsts, right? But if you're Memphis and you're trying to outbid what the Pacers have, you would have had to include that Golden State pick into the discussion for these 3. Mm-hmm. Like, Toronto would have never entertained a call for 3 future Memphis Grizzlies picks as they take on OG Anunoby, you know.
Like an already good team.
Yes, Jaren Jackson Jr., yeah. Ja Morant. Like, no, they're not doing that.
Here's the other scenario is that those teams resolve those roster spot issues other ways, right? Like, Indiana now has 4 picks in the top 31, and they're going to be in the lottery. What if they get the wing they're looking for, right? Yep. Or what if they just have so many young guards and bigs that they're like, you know what? We're going Cleveland style with no wings. We'll be the anti-Raptors.
That's like the other part of this too, dude, is like you have the Nets that are going to be sitting there this offseason, and what's the guarantee that the Nets don't just decide like, you know what? We will move Bridges if teams are willing to offer 3 first-round picks. Like, we don't think we're going to win with him. And
yeah,
so,
he's 26. He's older than OG. Yeah.
Exactly. But he's better than OG.
Yeah, and he has more years of control now. Yeah, like, he's got 3 years beyond this one. OG's got 1 in the option.
Yes, the market could absolutely change. So the idea that it's like you explored and you found out, I thought that was kind of funny too, where it was like, well, we found out a lot of the information. I was like, yeah, you better have. Well, that's kind of the bare minimum of what that could have happened here. Quickly, was there, other than the Suns, was there a winner for you at the deadline?
No, not really. I was pretty underwhelmed with how the teams around the Western Conference responded to the Suns making that move. I would have thought if you are Denver, maybe even Memphis, certainly the Clippers, the Pelicans, I guess I can justify it, but you still have Zion. Like, none of those teams doing more than just tweaking and adding like a seventh, eighth man type was a little disappointing. I thought the KD thing happening a little early would ramp up the intensity in the West, and there were a lot of moves. Like, Denver gets Thomas Bryant, address that backup center position. Yeah, exactly. Who cares? Memphis doesn't get anyone at a starter level. Like, Luke Kennard is fine, but I don't know if he can defend enough to play big minutes in a playoff series.
Those moves sucked.
Yeah, I think, honestly, of the West teams, the Lakers had a pretty good day.
Me too.
And the Clippers were underwhelming, but you get Bones and Eric Gordon.
Buddy,
you don't really lose anything.
Yeah, this is gonna Kennard, John Wall, and Reggie Jackson are the only ones that left.
This is gonna piss people off, but the price for Mason Plumlee was essentially nothing, and like Jakob Poeltl's bigger than him. How different is Mason Plumlee from Jakob Poeltl? Like, let's be honest here. I'm serious.
He's 6 years older than him. That's the big thing.
He's 6 years older than him, but he's a good rim protector.
Good passer.
Good passer. Good rebounder. Good clubhouse guy. Like,
cost less.
Can't shoot beyond 5 feet to save his life.
Same with Poeltl. Poeltl's free throw percentage people get is like 50% on his career. He's like a complete.
Yeah. Plumlee's at 56.
I'm just saying that. For the Raptors to trade a first-round pick and a second for the rights to give Yak $60 million versus Plumlee going for nothing. And like,
although Plumlee at Yak's age got a 3-year $50 million deal, so it's at least comparable.
No doubt. My point only here is that the Raptors were like, we wanted to find out what this group would look like with a big. Mm-hmm. There were way more effective ways of doing that than the Jakob Poeltl trade.
Look, Alex Len started a game not that long ago for the Sacramento Kings. There's a big out there you could retry.
But yeah, I don't know. I just thought Clippers getting Eric Gordon, Bones, and Plumlee. It's not overly, like, again, it's kind of whatever-ish. It's not amazing. It's not blow-you-away stuff. But I thought that they rounded out their roster a little bit and that those guys, like, maybe Bones has a moment for them, right? Like, he's actually just a guy where you could see it where he comes in and gives them something. A little redundant with Terrence Mann, I think, but somebody. Eric Gordon replaces some of the shooting you lose in Kennard, and then you add another big that steps in behind Zubac and can give you, like, competent minutes. I don't know. I'm probably overrating it. I've overrated the Clippers for every single year, though. I picked them to win the championship after they made Kawhi trade 2 years ago.
And, Wednesday night, they looked so uninspiring. They looked bad. And, like, they have this tremendous record when Kawhi and Paul George both play, but they never look, like, good or fun. But then there's, like, I remember what Kawhi Leonard looks like in the playoffs. And they have rounded out the roster better. Zubats is still pretty good.
And Paul George, you know, like, I'm watching him the other
shooting,
night.
More shooting,
yeah.
More versatility in that shooting guard position.
Very disrespected player, Paul George.
Like, trying to convince Westbrook to come to L.A.
The best player of all time with zero stands.
Can I tell you something? There's nothing more perfect than Westbrook going to the Clippers and them sewering all the positive momentum they have from this deadline and adding a guy who, yeah. If you're a contender and you want Russ, I was not kidding when I tweeted that the best fit for Russ now is the Beijing Ducks, because it's like, you cannot be a serious NBA or like franchise and go out and bring Russell Westbrook on
Shanghai team. Sharks?
Yeah, I mean, great. Are they higher in the standings? Like, who's trying to win out there?
I have no idea.
Like, who's trying to win? Anyway, Blake Murphy, you're a good guy. You're a good guy. Coming in here, doing this.
I got to go right
now. More of it. I know. I was going to say, you've been, like I said, you were the Mark Wahlberg schedule. You did BT yesterday. Mm-hmm. You did.
There were over 12 hours between when I started being on air yesterday and when I finished being on air yesterday.
And I have
people like talking smack in my mentions, like, oh, back in the day, you would have had multiple articles out by now. I was like, yeah, I didn't do 12 hours on air when I worked at The Athletic. I'm sorry.
You got to let the haters just. You know the thing about the haters? They wish they were you, like, almost all the time.
I don't think anyone wishes that this week.
You have something that makes them feel a certain way. It's almost always that. Anyway, quick break.
Anyway, that article will be up later today. All the cap scenarios and stuff like
Read
that.
Read it, but subscribe to this podcast.
Yeah,
and, you know, share it if you liked it. If you thought today, you know, these guys hit a lot of the notes of how I'm feeling, I'm going to share this sucker. I'm going to tell a friend about it. I'm going to recommend it to somebody. That would be cool. And you can listen to Blake later today, Fan Drive, and read his article. That's going to be up on sportsnet.ca. Obviously, we'll share it. Quick break. Let's come back. From one deadline and one podium to another, the Leafs, the sneaky, sneaky Leafs, tried to throw some things under the radar yesterday as the Raptors took all the slings and arrows. That's next. To everyone who said, what do you want the Raptors to do? Trade one star for a first-round pick? One first-round pick? One crappy first-round pick? Yeah, three firsts from Memphis and Pacers, confirmed by Zach Lowe. So, yeah. Frustration around the league with the way that Masai Ujiri was doing business. And, again, to wrap up kind of that hour, the thing that we celebrated about Masai, the uncompromising nature, the unwillingness to bend, it is now looking more like an issue than a point of pride for this fan base. And it's super interesting, too, because yesterday was the first time I ever watched Masai Ujiri, and I went, this is weird. I've said this before. Masai Ujiri is one of the most inspiring guys in my life. Like, I am a huge Masai fan. I was devastated at the idea that he was going to leave. It's hard to even think about, like, I think I've said before that he is a part of the fabric of this city. Like, when you think of Toronto, you think about Masai Ujiri. The way that he's embraced this place, the way that he speaks about this place and advocates for it, it's powerful.
Yeah.
His Giants of Africa, which has now been going on for, like, I don't know when to get this right, but it's like 20 years. Maybe 25? This is a guy who slept on floors to be a scout and rose up to be one of the, like, the president of the Toronto Raptors, and who's in demand basically for just about any organization around basketball.
But that 2003, so 20 years now.
Yeah, 20 years. 20 years of Giants of basketball, or Giants of Africa. Mm-hmm. Like, what Masai has done globally will leave a far greater impact than anything that he does with the Toronto Raptors. The man himself is, yes, a true inspiration. Like, he is the real deal. I'm not here to talk about anything from the past. I'm saying right now, the last three seasons for the Toronto Raptors, there's essentially been one hit, and that has been drafting Scottie Barnes over Jalen Suggs.
Mm-hmm.
And hell, I was in the Jalen Suggs camp. I was dead wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You can end up being wrong. So he, you know, this Raptors group and Masai Ujiri, they have the opportunity, obviously, to change everybody's mind. But there's a little bit more evidence here over the last couple of seasons to indicate that this is a little bit more worrisome, and I don't know if we still get to blanket everything with hashtag trust Masai, hashtag believe in Masai. If you want to do that, fine. That's your right as a fan. Great. I understand your thinking behind it. Masai Ujiri brought the city a championship. He brought the Toronto Raptors, the Purple Dinosaur organization, a championship. Truly a laughingstock of the NBA for a very, very long time. A place that most people around basketball thought would never win. Like, think about that organization in your mind right now. Like, some people, it's like the Sacramento Kings will never win, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who's that team for you guys? Like, when you think about a team.
The Oakland Athletics.
Sure, whatever.
I think I would say Utah, just because of Utah. Man. But now things are turning. I wasn't around there back in the day, right? With the Karl Malone and everything.
Shut up. Yeah, for me, it's like, just to put it in hockey terms, you could, like, the Toronto Raptors felt like a lot of people, like the Arizona Coyotes.
I knew you were going to say the Coyotes.
No, I'm serious though. It's like, it's the team where people go, why is that there?
Yeah.
And Toronto Raptors fans supported them, but for a long time it was, man, this fan base is being built because the tickets are more affordable than the Leafs, or you had to be a Raptors season ticket holder to get Leafs tickets. And they became champions during Masai Ujiri's stewardship. The city should never be disrespectful towards Masai. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a man who has earned your respect. But this is talking about sports. And I'm sorry, but you're allowed to question the moves within the sports sphere.
Yeah.
And you're allowed to question the process in which guys do business. And to me, the process that the Raptors have taken for the last couple of years has not been great. Mm. It appears from the outside looking in and from reading tea leaves like they have overvalued their guys. They have been too tough in negotiations, and it has hurt them down the line. And I really don't believe, much like your point about Teoscar, I don't think that they made that trade for Jakob Poeltl 2 days ago thinking this will be the only move we make.
Yeah. That's what I was about to ask. I mean.
And now, the Raptors have put themselves in a situation where there is so much more risk than reward.
Yeah.
Because, okay, what's the reward? The reward has to be a championship when you make moves like that, when you trade first-round picks and when you turn down 3 first-round picks.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, it has to be, right? You got to be trying to win a championship. I don't see how a realistic observer could believe that they do that. Even if they end up winning, right? Let's say the Raptors actually do this thing. They go on a run and they win a championship and they stick it to everybody. It would be one of the most unlikely championships in the history of professional sports. I'm trying to think about, I just want to look at what the championship odds are right now for the Raptors. Let's quickly pull up. I don't have this. Damn it. This isn't working. What is the Raptors championship odds? They're not even listed here. Anyways, this is bad radio.
Listed.
Someone find them for me and tell me what they are. But it's not Leicester City, but it would be kind of close.
15,000 on DraftKings.
15,000 to
win. 15,000 to win the NBA.
What was Leicester City?
Leicester City was lower than that. I will get the exact number for you.
My point is 15,000 to one is go find me the amount of championships that have ever been 15,000 to one. Okay?
Leicester City was 5,000 to one.
Yeah, okay. That's what I mean. That's the standard bearer for most unbelievable championship?
Yes. I would say so, yes.
Yeah. Find me a champion ever that was plus 15,000 to one that actually pulled it off without, yeah, just even if you find the circumstances, find me what it is. Find me what the, like, go ahead, you guys can try to look. Anybody wants to try to find it. The Raptors winning a championship in the next 2 seasons would be a miracle. Mm-hmm. So maybe they get an OG trade done in the offseason. Maybe it's the exact same thing. Maybe they find out more information about their team. To me, that is not reward enough to take on the risk of an alternate reality where you win a bunch of games with a group, or you win more games with a group that take you out of the potential or the better potential to land 2 generational players that are in a draft, a deep NBA draft this year as well, one where there is a lot of talent beyond 1 and 2. And it's not worth the risk of potentially losing a player for nothing, which is absolutely on the table right now with Gary Trent Jr. and Fred VanVleet. And I think it's especially on the table with Fred VanVleet now, considering, hey, he's going to be very aware that they tried to trade him. Fred VanVleet is no fool. And he bets on himself, and he is going to do what is best for him. And part of this is not like I think that this can't be resolved if they want to re-sign Fred and bring him back. I think there's very much potential there for that. But it's kind of hard to preach any type of loyalty to Fred going into this offseason now and trying to get him to buy into a contract extension and say, hey, we want you here in Toronto, and not have him be going, no, I'm trying to maximize every single dollar. And you having to make the decision of paying a 31-year-old point guard over $100 million on term. Someone who the rest of the NBA did not deem valuable enough to give up a first-round pick and a player for this year when he's able to come off the books.
Right.
And when he can help you win a championship right now. Like, if you're the Los Angeles Clippers, this is not my opinion of whether or not they were stupid for not doing this deal for Fred.
Right.
All I'm saying is that the Clippers, in a must-win season with Kawhi and Paul George, felt Fred VanVleet was not worth giving up 26-year-old Terrence Mann, despite them bringing in Bones Highland, and a future first-round pick that's years down the line. That's pretty significant in terms of telling you about how the league perceives Fred VanVleet right now. Will he find a suitor that will pay him money? Absolutely he will. But does that mean that the rest of the NBA would go, you want to have contracts where the rest of the league goes, damn, I wish we got that guy on that. Right? Like when Dylan Cousins signed with the Sabres the other day.
Yeah.
And everyone went, boy, that's awesome. If he can round out his defensive game a little bit, this guy is going to be one of the like best contracts in the NHL. He scores. He's tough. He's from the coolest place on earth.
I knew that was coming.
He's a UConn Mustang, of which I am an alum. That's right.
There you
no
go.
No big deal. Me and Dylan Cousins, same team.
You and the Cuz.
No worries. No, no. Don't sweat it too much. Don't overthink it.
By the way, I do have the in sports betting history.
You hit me.
The longest odds. It's Leicester City by an overwhelming margin.
Yeah, of course. That's what I'm saying. But who's next?
The next highest is the Rams in '99, which was 150-1.
Yeah. Okay. So there you go. 10 times.
Yeah.
The Raptors are ten times as unlikely to win as the second most unlikely franchise to ever win a championship and at least, you know, major
in
sports.
Major sports betting history, yeah. They're like, there's some old ones from like the 60s and stuff, but yeah, there was no...
But just, like, again, everybody give me a break here. Why can't we just talk about this realistically? Why does this have to be such a weird culture war thing?
Yeah.
Like, why does this need to become, like, political?
The team needs to change.
The Raptors are a team where their own president is standing at a podium, sitting at a podium, going, these guys are selfish, they don't play together, and we don't know why it's not working. And, like, he was sad. He looked...
Yeah.
That's the first time he looked kind of defeated. Anyway, it was awful to watch it. I hated it. It was uncomfortable. And I've never seen Masai Ujiri like that before. And it never felt as, like, there was almost... It seemed like there was a part of him that couldn't believe that he was being questioned. But I do wonder if he woke up this morning and went, ugh, maybe I should have done that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Ooh,
maybe I shouldn't have asked for that much.
Maybe if all these teams are leaking information about what they offered to me, I made a bit of a mistake. And again, there's all these people that are like tweeting me constantly about how the Raptors can't afford to just give up stars. First of all, they have one star and it's Pascal Siakam. Like, and he didn't make the All-Star game, which you can say was a snub or whatever, but they have one star. OG Anunoby's not a star. Fred VanVleet is not a star. They can play up to that level sometimes, but no, there's no... They do things extremely well. They have one star. So let's stop with this. They have very good players. Really good players.
Yes.
They're not stars, for God's sakes. Secondarily, yeah, the Raptors can't do that. That's why it's crazy that they're going to go into an offseason with three unrestricted free agents who they're absolutely not going to go into the luxury tax for and could potentially lose one of those guys for nothing. Masai said it at the media conference. He goes, I don't know what that means, lose for nothing. It's like, I can tell you right now, it means that you walk a guy into free agency and he walks and you do not recoup an asset and it hurts the depth of your organization. See your team right now, Masai.
Yeah.
See your team in this very moment where your coach won't play a guy on the bench because he doesn't trust anybody. That every once in a while you get a flash from Chris Boucher. That's your bench.
Every once in a while.
Cool. That's what happens.
Yeah.
That's the result of not getting something for somebody. So spare me with this stuff. And okay, you can't trade the Raptors players for this. It's like, no, you can. The market is the market. And sometimes, and when you're in this position, you do not have the right to just say, whatever, screw it. We'll decide and we'll see what happens. Like, no, you need to be able to recoup assets back at some point. You can't just let this go on forever and ever and ever. Look at, okay, this is a good way to pivot in Toronto Maple Leafs. Where the Leafs are at right now, and they held their own media conference yesterday for anybody who cares, because everybody's just still so sick about the Raptors and whatever. The Leafs hold their own media conference, and a lot of people think it's just, you know, you're pretty classic after the All-Star break. Kyle Dubas, what are you really going to glean from it? There was a couple of things. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, before I get into those things, are at a point where they're talking about how they do not want to give up first-round picks, and they do not want to give up their top asset. Do you know why they can't do that?
Because they don't have any assets.
Correct. Because they have done this. They have drained it to the point where we're talking about Alex Steeves getting a shot, where Bobby McMahon gets in there every once in a while, where they're still going back to Wayne Simmons. God love them. Mm-hmm. To try to be in their bottom six right now, where they're trying to figure things out. Because they depleted that depth because they let guys walk to free agency and they never got first round picks back for them. And then they used assets to try and go get other players, whether it was get off of some bad deals like the Nick Ritchies or whether it was to go out and get heroes to the nation like Mark Giordano, right? Mm-hmm. They have had to remove and they have not restocked and they have not added to that. And it has put them in a precarious position where this year they have to decide, are we going all in? And you don't want to be there as an organization. Like, you don't want to be there, especially in a salary cap league where bounces can go against you. Like, I understand the Toronto Maple Leafs reservation, right? But the Raptors being the 10 seed in the Eastern Conference right now, having a complete uphill battle, schedule or not, talent or not, being 15,000 to one.
Three times more unlikely than Leicester City.
To win a championship. For them to say, like, we're going to continue to see what we have with this group. And we're going to risk not stockpiling assets to this team. It's nonsensical. It's there's a real disconnect. And I'm sorry, I hate groupthink. I really do. Groupthink is abhorrent to me. You need the other person in the room that starts to say something else. It's always good to have a little bit of a zag.
Yeah.
But when you go against every smart observer, when every team in basketball is inquiring about your players, thinking that they're available, you're holding these talks for this long, when every analyst, observer, long-term contract person, ex-general manager, whatever, is saying the Raptors have to make a move and that this is fair value for this stuff, again, maybe it's you, maybe that's the problem with overvaluing what you have and not being a little bit more compromising to make those adjustments. Okay, so for Kyle Dubas, the reason why I bring this up is, quote, Dubas says he can't see the Leafs dealing first-round picks or top prospects like Matthew Knies for rentals. Let's hear what he gave as the other option for that, because, he outlined what they could end up doing.
Yeah, I think the answer that one can give to that question might be a little deceptive. I think at every single trade discussion that we have, we're at the part and where we're at as a franchise where can't necessarily say no to anything right off the hop. Having said that, there are some players and some draft pick capital that we have that are extremely valuable that would be hard pressed to move on from.
Play the next clip.
With where we're at, I think we're going to the year. We've got a lot of cap flexibility, and I think we want to see what the rest of the year brings before we commit to anything necessarily. And
that's,
I think we've got
about
great relationships.
Stop the clip. That's not what I wanted. It's okay. I'll just read again what he said. Yeah, we'll see what the rest of the year brings before we commit to anything extra. Yeah, and anyways, but with regards to other options, I don't think you say no off the hop to anything. But those are very important pieces to us for now and in the future. Kyle Dubas is signaling that it's going to be extremely difficult for him to trade those long-term, those big major assets, because they're already so depleted. Here's what I have to say about this. I think it's real, but I also think it's posturing. Okay, like, I don't, Kyle Dubas has never wanted to give up those kind of assets for rentals. Like, that's not a new thing for him.
Yeah.
He did one Nick Foligno trade where it was, hey, this is a major rental. This is just like a one-off situation. Matthew Nyes for a year of someone was never going to make sense. It still feels a little bit like the Leafs when they're talking about these pieces. Maybe Chychrun ends up being the guy. But again, I can't sit here and tell you guys today or pretend to you guys today that I have some real strong belief like Jacob Chychrun is the major piece. Here's what I will tell you, though. He helps them more than Matthew Nyes is going to this year. Mm-hmm. I think all he's trying to communicate to league and to hockey fans is to temper their expectations so that they don't end up in a place where the Raptors fans were, where it got completely out of control with what people wanted back.
Yeah.
And to me, Dubas is going to be very diligent with things like the rental, things with the first round pick and things with Matthew Nyes. There's no doubt that they really want to keep this guy. But I don't think that this changes anything in terms of push comes to shove. This means they're absolutely out on Timo Meier. Mm. I think that it's going to be flexible over the next month, and then what the Leafs do is going to have some impact here. The clip that Austin just played there was about Bunting and the other pending free agents. And that was where he said, we want to see what the rest of the year brings before we commit to anything necessarily. That I kind of find pretty interesting because it's honest, and it doesn't, like, you know, when you listen to that clip, it doesn't sound harsh. It's not too much. It's like, okay, that kind of makes sense. It's kind of weird, though, when you, and it's a much smaller deal, right? Connor Timmins on a $1 million contract a year for two seasons is pretty much a nothing. It's some defensive depth.
Yeah.
That's, you know, if the cap's going up, that's essentially what close to a minimum is going to be for some of these guys, right?
Keep like him around.
Yeah, it's a, hey, this guy's got some offensive upside. We know what he is. We think he can drop in the lineup. We don't feel horrible about him coming out of it, but it's a good depth piece. You can't have too much depth on the blue line. It's fine at that price. Whatever. Yeah. It's that's my opinion on the Connor Timmins thing, by the way. Like, people went, "What do you think?" I went, "Ah, it's fine. Like,
that's
it's
what I was
fine.
Waiting
it's
for. Yeah, all
no, but Raptors it's fine.
Talk.
It's nothing. There's nothing else to really say about it. I don't think that Connor Timmins is the type of defenseman that is really going to help this team come playoff time. Mm. I think his ideal situation is being a seventh defenseman. I think he gives them a little bit of insurance if they lose Rasmus Sandin or they decide to deal Rasmus Sandin, whatever. But yeah, ultimately, like, he's a defenseman who is making $1.1 million a year. And if he wasn't on the Toronto Maple Leafs, not a single person on earth would be talking about him ever. but the Bunting thing, a lot of times, like even yesterday, right, when they asked Masai Ujiri about bringing back the free agents and the intention, a lot of times it's just like they talk about loving guys and, you know, really throwing praise their way, whatever. Because it's like, that's just media speak. This is what, an agent might take it. I'd love to talk to one of them one time about, hey, do you ever take stuff that guys say in the media and try to throw back at them? Because that feels like a weird negotiation. Like, who cares? There's negotiations through media.
Yeah.
But just to read that and go, we want to see what the rest of the year brings before we commit to anything necessarily. Huh. All right. You just gave a free agent some money that day.
Yeah.
Literally that day.
True, yeah.
And now you're saying, like, you want to see how everything plays out.
Do you think Dubas is just saying that as more of like a, just like a, we'll just see what happens. Like, he doesn't want to actually answer it.
Yeah, I'm just saying that it was an easy position for him to take and just say, like, we know how much, like, we value Michael Bunting. Like, he's such an important player on this team. Like, you know, I don't think anything that they say is going to affect the way that Michael Bunting plays.
Yeah,
I think
how he feels or anything.
How he feels is very different than how he plays.
Yeah. How would you think that made him feel then, if you hear that?
I don't know him well enough to guess. I can only say how it would make me feel, and I'm not him.
True. Like, good point.
I don't know. Like, I'd be guessing. I kind of feel like that's a little bit irresponsible for me to kind of guess how it would make him feel. All I'm saying is that reading it, I go, that's not really, that's a something. That felt like a little bit of a something. Kyle Dubas actually will say the odd thing, you know? He'll actually give you a little bit in some of these media conferences.
The rare one that he does. Yeah.
Anyway, lastly, the thing that he said was, quote, some of the larger focus is always on the bigger names, but we have to look at the people who may improve us overall and not just the bigger names per se, end quote. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But I also think that a lot of fans watching this team are kind of tired of the, well, we're bumping up this tiny little thing, and then you miss out and you lose in the playoffs. And if the Bruins get, you know, Timo Meier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's another temper of expectations type quote.
Yeah,
there.
It's a temper of expectations, but I actually think that that one is like one that frustrates fans, a lot of fans more, is some people, a lot of people want to see this team win. Yeah. And it's like, if you're not going to be all in, like, when are you going to be all in? Like, when are you going to be offering some of this stuff? Because it made sense for you to go outside of your boundary during the North season and say, yeah, you can have a first round pick for Nick Foligno because, God, we should be right there. Mm-hmm. Like, how does this backfire? And it does because, you know, they're the Maple Leafs.
Yeah.
But I will say that I'm starting to feel a little bit of that too. Like, I'm not a big fan of giving up Knies for a rental either. I think that a lot of times you do overpay with the NHL deadline in terms of, you know, the actual tangible benefit to your current roster. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just don't want people to get confused with the idea that Matthew Knies is going to come in here and help this team as much as some of these other guys. Like, that's just not going to happen. My thing is that, like, that's very rare. That's very real. My friend Anthony Petrelli wrote a really great piece on, you know, guys from college that have jumped in and really helped Stanley Cup contenders, and it's like not a really long list. It's usually people that get a little too excited about it and doesn't end up working out. Anyway, it would be a little disappointing, I think, for the Leafs this year if they go and come out of the deadline with, like, just like a
bottom six guy,
yeah,
type
like
thing.
A Jake McCabe, and you know,
yeah,
maybe
I was just gonna say, yeah,
like it's just like some people want the needle moved a little bit. And again, this is fan want versus what is reality and what is the right proper expectation. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously been a little bit of buzz about the Leafs wanting to take a big swing. I think that internally they have to be feeling that to a certain degree. They can't be feeling like, boy, let's just make a little fringy move and let's kind of see what ends up happening. And then they see their two biggest rivals potentially continue to take big swings, like Tampa did last year when they acquired Hagel, like Tampa did last year when they acquired Paul. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I think Tampa's still going to do something this year. They're going to continue to add to their team. How much? I don't know. Probably not as splashy. But yeah, I didn't like that one. Anyway, let's take a quick break. Super Bowl weekend. Let's do our final betting preview. I'm still torn on my winner, but I'll make a pick. That's next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, it's time for action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in the action. Must be 19 plus, must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. So, again, this has been the most muted Super Bowl week of my life. I can't believe this. This has been such a crazy week for the Raptors and for Toronto that I couldn't even talk about the massive UFC card. Like, things have fallen around. Yeah. Things are falling around.
LeBron had the record.
Well, I talked about that.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, the things that have happened this week that have, like, taken attention away from the big game.
I see. The big game, as they call it.
For good reason, though, if we had, like, clearing our schedule for the Raptors, if something had happened, it would have been
great. It's fine. I don't feel as though I gave a bunch of my Super Bowl thoughts throughout the week. I'm going to try to give a little bit more now. I would have, in any other year, wanted to give more. I usually obsess over the Super Bowl and read every little article and, you know, get into every single thing. And
biggest game of the year.
This is the year where I did that the least. So I kept looking at betting stuff. I've thrown down a lot of bets. But I'd like to share with you guys my favorite bet for the Super Bowl.
Wow. Okay.
Is it a serious bet, or is this like a?
Oh, it's a serious bet.
Serious bet. Okay.
Well, sorry. Do you mean serious as in it involves?
Is there like a little bit of fun in there?
Oh, there's fun. It's a cross sport.
Special.
Oh, I have a cross sport special.
Yeah. You guys have the same one. This is going to be dramatic.
There's two in here that have a lot of value to me. One is an easy, or I shouldn't say an easy layup, because it's a minus 200, and you're like, oh, whatever. But you know me. I put a decent chunk of change down on some of these things. And so minus 200 for Connor McDavid to have more points against Montreal than Jalen Hurts to have touchdown passes. Like, Connor McDavid very easily could have 2-3 touchdown passes in that game.
Connor McDavid could have 2-3 touchdown passes?
Sorry. I'm reading Connor McDavid, but Jalen Hurts.
He might. You never know.
I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to do that. But Connor McDavid could have 3 points, no doubt about it. I think that one is like, but it's minus 200. That's not that fun. The one I like, Alex Ovechkin, total points versus the San Jose Sharks. The leaky San Jose Sharks. For him to have more points versus San Jose than Jalen Hurts to have touchdown passes. Alex Ovechkin plus 185.
Plus 185, wow.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting the plus money, but as soon as you see the plus sign.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't want to waste everybody's time. I'm just saying I use that to illustrate the value swing.
Right, right.
Between McDavid and Ovechkin on this one. I think that's, okay, go look at Jalen Hurts' stats, and Joe has brought this up on the show already, but my biggest question mark for this game is, well, I have two. One is, are the Eagles going to be able to run the ball against the Chiefs with just reckless abandon, where they just are not, like, they're completely unstoppable? And are the Chiefs going to be able to hold up against the Eagles' pass rush? I know it's kind of lame to do the, this game's going to be won in the trenches, but, and that's kind of the way that this is going to end up going down. That's the strength on strength. Eagles pass rush versus the Chiefs passing game. Chiefs run defense versus Eagles rushing attack.
Yeah.
The Eagles, though, like, yeah, Joe, you brought up, like, Jalen Hurts' stats, since he hurt his shoulder, have fallen off of a cliff.
Yeah.
He's not been nearly the same guy as the passer. And some of that is definitely, like, the opponent, the situation, the game scripts, right? Like, I don't think that it's all, it's like, there's far less opportunity, there's far less sample when it comes to Jalen Hurts and what he's done since then. Mm-hmm. That being said, there's enough there. We've seen him miss throws. We've seen him overthrow guys. We've not seen him be deadly as a passer since the injury. And we also have a little bit of suspicion as to what is going on with A.J. Brown and why he only has 50 yards in his last two playoff games combined, by the way, and why he was like looking so distraught on the sideline with Nick Sirianni after the Giants game and then had no impact essentially against the Niners. And let's not forget that Niners game was over. It was over as soon as Purdy went out of the game.
Yeah. It was a wrap.
Even after CMC scored it and I felt like, oh boy, this is starting to feel like a choke job. They couldn't move the ball against it. They were trying to move the ball through the air for a while. The one catch that was made was not actually a catch, right? It's the bobbled one, which did change the game. I just don't see him chucking a lot of touchdown passes in this game.
Jalen Hurts only has two in the last three games.
That's what I'm saying. I think it's very unlikely that he has two touchdown passes. I like the under of his touchdown passes, but Alex Ovechkin, a man who is very much trying to score and rack up a ton of points, who's playing a San Jose Sharks team that's dreadful. I think he could easily have 2 points in that game. So for plus 185, I really like the value. I think the Sharks stink. I think that's a good opportunity for Ovechkin to be able to pad some stats. I used to say that. I used to say that back in the day with friends. Yeah, exactly. And then it ended up leaking on the air. Anyway, I like this one for Ovechkin. I think if he can get 2 points in that game, it's a nice little bet. I don't think Jalen Hurts is going to get two touchdowns. That being said, I would look at what it pays for Ovechkin to get 2 points.
Ovechkin has 14 goals in 24 games against the Sharks in his career. And 9 assists. So he's point per game.
The Sharks stink. They are a true blue cellar dweller.
Yep.
And Ovechkin could absolutely get points against them. So that's my favorite novelty prop, cross sport special. Okay, what do you guys got? I've been waiting for what you guys. Joe's been chomping at the bit all week.
I know. I've been waiting a lot for this one. I have two that I really like. The first one is Boston Scott over on his rushing yards. The last couple of weeks, he's been getting the rock a lot more. His snap count is way higher in the last 3 weeks. He's averaging 7 carries and 35 yards a game over that time. Granted, two of them are against the Giants, and he is the Giant killer. But his rushing prop, I just want to make sure I have the updated one because it's been changing a lot. It's 7.5 yards.
Yeah.
It is minus 140, so it's kind of a piece that you toss into a parlay and get a little bit of value out of that. But 7.5 is way too low for a guy who's been like 5 times more than that in the last couple of weeks. And Hurts, like we've mentioned before, is a little banged up, so they're not going to be rushing him into the teeth of the defense. They've been using Gainwell, Sanders, Boston Scott a lot. 7.5. I like it a lot.
Here's the problem. Kenneth Gainwell over 19.5 is mine, and it's much better.
Also very low. I also had that
19.5
I had that one written down as well.
Dude, it's Kenneth Gainwell, 19.5 rush yards makes absolutely no sense to me. His last 3 games, he's had 35, 112, and 48.
Averaging 65 yards a game.
The last two, again, game script matters for these things.
Yeah.
But the last two playoff games, he's had 12 and 14 attempts. Both of his longest rushes, one was 35 yards, one was 17 yards, and he's sitting at 19.5? I don't understand. I don't understand. He's clearly one of those guys where they make gadget plays for. And yeah, I really like him as an impact guy in this game. I think he's going to have a moment in this game. He's going to get a couple of chances in this game to hit 20 yards rushing.
Yeah.
Like I don't get it.
Well, for a guy who, for reference, his carries in that time, just lower than Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Sanders is averaging 13. Gainwell's averaging 11. So he's just under Miles Sanders. And Sanders probably, I believe it's at 60 and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a 40-yard swing.
That there's going to be more rushing in this game than there appears to be. I like I like Hurts' over rushing, 50 and a half. I've already mentioned that I don't mind Isaiah Pacheco's over, although it's kind of weirdly low for a guy. And he's the sort of dude that I kind of am fading a little bit just because the rest of the... it seems like a lot of people are on Pacheco and that he's kind of a very sexy, popular pick. And I usually have my antennas up with guys like that.
You're on Jerick McKinnon. That's your boy.
But Miles Sanders, Kenneth Gainwell, Jalen Hurts, I like all those guys to be able to go over the rushing total. So you adding one more Boston Scott one, fine.
For 7.5, too. Yeah, like, fine. It's so low.
Yeah, it's not bad. I don't mind it. I like him more as a receiving back, but yeah, 7.5 is not terrible. Pete, what do you like?
You guys are focusing on football. I will be focusing on the color of Gatorade. since 2001, orange-colored Gatorade has been dumped on coaches 5 times, 22.7% of the time. That's the highest amount. But yellow is the favorite at plus 165. You can get orange Gatorade at plus 300.
Yeah.
And after the Chiefs won the Super Bowl last time, Andy Reid, orange Gatorade.
Here's my thing. Is that a good sign or a bad sign?
That they've already...
He used that color of Gatorade with the Chiefs.
Fair enough. I believe after they won the AFC Championship...
How have I never read an article on how they determine what the Gatorade color is?
It seems like such a story every year, and you just never hear anything about it.
I'm sure there has been, but I don't recall ever reading a tweet. I don't recall seeing an article. Like, for everything that happens, like, every year we get, do you know how many chicken wings are consumed? But it's like... Can I get a story? Like, we get Ice Maker, right? Hey, this guy makes the best ice for the NHL. Where's the Gatorade person?
Yeah, so true, yeah.
Where's the person who goes and puts the Gatorade color and decides it, knows, like, there will be thousands of dollars. I don't know how many dollars are spent on. I'd like to know, one, how much money is put on the Gatorade color every year? Because I didn't want to say a million because that feels high because you got to be out of your mind to be like overly confident. That always feels like a $10, $20, you
just
know.
Just for fun.
Yeah, cheapo little bet. You take a long shot, whatever. But I'd like to know what that process is, how they keep it under guard. Like, when do they go and determine? Because it's clearly
it's like hidden
mix.
Under lock and key type
you know,
thing.
It's the mix.
Blue is like by far the most popular flavor sales-wise, right?
Yeah.
I think we all agree with that. But
Blue Gatorade is the best.
Yeah, but...
Yellow is underrated, though.
Low tier.
So it
kind of
looks like
pee-pee,
and so everyone's like, "Eek!" But it's yummy.
Yeah.
Hey, Pete, blue Gatorade's been the color of choice in the last 50% over the last 8 years.
Yeah.
50% over the last eight years.
See, that's what's the value?
It's been four times since 2015.
What's the value for blue right now?
What's the value for blue? That's a good question.
Oh, come on, you gotta have all these.
Plus 400.
Yeah, I like that. I'm in on that.
Blue.
Yeah. Hey, Joe just said half the time it's there. You just said it's the best flavor.
Last night,
Joe.
It wasn't something about it. Wasn't good.
Come with me on Team Blue. Plus 400.
Blue.
Well,
what's
your bet?
Plus 300?
Plus 300
for orange.
You're a clown.
It's been done before.
So what?
It's been done before. The Chiefs might like orange, you know?
But he just said.
So the experts are saying the only reason orange has higher odds is because of the Chiefs' history with it.
That's a sucker's bet. That's a sucker bet.
No surprise.
This show does not endorse orange Gatorade, okay?
Blue all the way.
Orange is like the worst. Of the Gatorades, too.
I got it recently.
Terrible. It's like, it gets in the back of your throat.
No,
it's kind of like,
it's horrible.
It's weird, too, because orange is the color they've always gone with like the advertising. Like, I think about Michael Jordan with Gatorade always.
Yes.
And it was always like Michael Jordan with an orange cup of Gatorade.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or as, what does Jack Hughes call it? Gato? That's the...
Gato.
I was like, oh, that's what we're doing now?
I sometimes hear people like say that, like, just, and they're like, yeah, grab some Gato. And I'm like, what? What is that? And then I have to think about it, and then I put the dots together.
Oh, interesting.
Wow, really?
That's really
interesting thought process by you, Joe.
Sorry, my words came out of my mouth faster than my brain was working.
The detective Joe Bosch. You actually, there is a show called Bosch with the detective. That's you.
Is there?
Yeah, that's you now.
Yeah, there's also an appliance
the
company.
It was weirdly hard for me to say.
I also have another pretty fun bet if I want to toss it in there.
What is it?
So it's the jersey number of the first touchdown score over 11.5. At plus 105. So you're getting plus money on it.
Huh.
I have a whole bunch of stats. I'm not going to say all of them because that's going to be way too many numbers. But the big thing is here, Travis Kelce had the first Chiefs touchdown 8 times this year. Obviously, his jersey number is over 11. You also get Dallas Goedert in there. You get Miles Sanders in there.
That's pretty good.
So you have some pretty good options. Obviously, Mecole Hardman, too, has had a couple for the Chiefs, but he's not going to be there.
Here's my issue with this bet. Don't mind it because...
Is that plus money?
Yeah. My only issue is that if I'm going to do that, I'd rather just sprinkle a couple first touchdown scores on those guys at bigger odds.
True.
Because, like, right now, you can get Travis Kelce first touchdown score at plus 700. So, like, if the major reason behind your thinking is that Travis Kelce could be the first touchdown score of that game, then do that. Like, he and Sanders are both that. So I would just rather if, like,
I see your thought process.
If I'm going to bet Dallas Goedert, Travis Kelce, and Miles Sanders to score the first touchdown of the game, I'd rather just put $20 down on each of those three guys.
I do see that,
and lose the $60 rather than bet $60 on, what was it, plus 105?
Plus 105.
Yeah, but over plus 105. Like,
I guess the thought process of this is, like, you get multiple, like, the chance of you hitting it is obviously way higher, which is why the odds are lower.
No, but I'm saying I'm going to bet all of those things just in isolation, where it's like, hey, who are the guys to score the first touchdown of the game?
So
I like sprinkling a bunch of those
on. Put down more to get a bigger return.
Yeah,
true.
Exactly.
I do see that.
Exactly.
That was just a fun one that I saw, and I'm like, huh.
Yeah, it's not a bad
pretty
one.
Cool.
I do like looking for the long shot, like who could get the first touchdown of the game, guys. I don't mind Noah Gray at plus 5,500.
Did you see Drake placed over $1 million in bets yesterday?
Yeah, I did. Oh, by the way, I guess I should make my pick, seeing as we only have a couple minutes here.
Right.
I said it on the morning show. I have flip-flopped on this game all week. You know why? Because it's a really, really great Super Bowl. This is a really great matchup. It's the two best teams in the NFL this year. Maybe the Bengals are better than the Chiefs, but hey, the best team won. They got here.
It's Patrick Mahomes.
It's the best player against the best team.
Yeah.
And you have a quarterback in Jalen Hurts who had an incredible year, but has this opportunity to be like, hey, man, are you the real deal?
Yeah.
Because here's where you're going to change your legacy to people. I love it, the Super Bowl, but I'm picking the Chiefs.
I'm
being a public guy. I just think that it's a coin toss game, and I'm getting plus money. And here's my thing. I want to root for Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
It's when I bet against Mahomes last week with my Bengals, and my 22-1 future was on it, and I was sitting there with a Bengals tease, and like, yeah, there was all kinds of stuff going on. Bengals money line, like, there was all kinds of things happening. Bengals. And when Patrick Mahomes makes one of those special plays, you just go, man, that's awesome.
This guy's good.
And I want to be on the side of that. And here's my thinking. Is Patrick Mahomes going to become the guy who loses 2 out of 3 Super Bowls? Like, I know sometimes it's plain and simple, but it's like, this kind of feels like his moment, his team, his game, him and Kelce. Kelsey's getting older. Reed against his old team. I'm scared about it because I could definitely see the Eagles just getting after him and changing this game and them running the ball and making it tough. I think this game comes down to Patrick Mahomes, Harrison Bucker, Travis Kelce, Andy Reid. I trust those guys. As my friend Phil says, it's good for the Chiefs. I'm on the Chiefs. So I'm betting Chiefs plus, I think, 110 or 105, last I saw it. Plus 105 right now.
Plus 105.
All right, we got to run. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Super Bowl. Enjoy a big UFC card. We'll talk to you later. A new